on. I got to write it down. Sarah just said, during the break, I can either read this quote or I can read the one from earlier.
Okay, fine, this one.
I'll read them both. Did I not read the quote from earlier?
Yes, I don't want you to.
You want me to read this?
I really don't, but I figure I have no choice.
Sarah Dillon, quote, I just had Gmail go down on me for 12 hours.
Feel better?
Yes, I do. Do you?
Well, check up.
It's been 12 hours.
503-733-2970. Thank you for coming by. We'll talk to Peter Carlin here in just a skosh. Ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, please.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
A Depot Bay man cranked up his car while driving, drunk a nice car too, a Mercedes on Highway 18 West of Grand Rond, and tried to run away, but he got caught. Numerous people who had witnessed the erratic driving before the crash stopped to help, and this driver, David Arambine, allegedly asked for a ride to avoid the responding police. When no ride was offered, he just walked away. He was found about a half hour later, hiding in a ditch under some bushes. Once released from the hospital, they plan to book him on multiple charges, including DUI, felony, habitual offender, reckless driving, driving with a suspended license, and driving without insurance.
Fantastic.
And wrecking a nice car. Meanwhile, two students from the Florida School of the Deaf and Blind are accused of making homemade explosives and lighting them up.
How? How? Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
This comes to us from WJXT, where Richard Dunn works. The last time we heard, the school recently released a video that shows two students making the devices, which police say were created with items commonly found in kitchens.
And they're deaf and blind?
Yeah.
A deaf, dumb, and blind kid sure makes a blah, blah, bomb. All right.
Yeah.
If you're deaf and blind, how would you even know what you're handling? How would you even know what you're mixing together? Well, I guess it worked out poorly. Did they blow themselves up?
No, they did not.
Well, how is it? Well, God, more power to them. I got all my senses, and I probably couldn't make a bomb correctly. So, I mean, you know, whatever. Well, there you go. I guess that's sort of like a Beethoven being deaf and writing.
The man
music
shown in the video is a 20-year-old senior from the deaf department.
Huh? What?
He's a 20-year-old in the deaf department.
What?
We're moving along.
Oh, I am five.
Meanwhile, a Snohomish County Sheriff's Office says a 4-year-old Everett boy, weighing only 22 pounds, about half what he should weigh, has been removed from his home. Detectives say the father effectively starved the child.
Is it going to be another story that makes me want to go kill someone?
It was a form of punishment or discipline.
You know what would be a form of punishment or discipline? If we took that dad and yanked out his teeth one by one and then set him on fire and then kicked him into a goddamn sewage plant. Oh, I hate people. Just when I think I'm not going to hate people, you have a story like that. All right. We had a sort of new segment on the Rick Emerson Show called Humanity is a Lost Cause and ought to be disposed of. Seriously, there's just, the people are the problem. That's going to be my new bumper sticker. She's going to say, people are the problem.
Well, this is Everett. All people there are problems.
Okay. Everett needs a cleansing. Let's do one more and then we'll talk to Peter Carlin.
All right. President should fix the problems at Walter Reed. They already got rid of some guy working there today. And who is this? Oh, Bob Dole says, yes, something must be done.
There are 154 VA hospitals, a total of 1,400 VA facilities, if you count nursing homes and other facilities they have. There are 70 DOD hospitals, Department of Defense hospitals, and we're to look at all of it.
Yes, that was Bob Dole.
Bob Dole.
He says he gets a lot of mail.
You just see some of the emails I'm getting. People wanting to be on the commission, wanting to help, wanting to volunteer, saying you ought to come look at this place or this place. But I must say, in fairness, we're getting some very positive emails from people who've been in hospitals, been in Walter Reed, for example.
All right.
Bob Dole.
There you go. Bob Dole. I'm sorry. That's just today. I don't know what it is, man. Today it's just the bottom of the barrel humor for me. Today all my jokes are simple and basic and obvious and stupid. But because I think I'm not fully awake today,
the only celebrity deaths are people that no one's ever heard of.
Seriously, Richard Jenny. I've already forgotten his name. Was it Richard?
I believe it was. Yes.
I keep confusing it with Richard.
What's that picture taken? No, he was on The Real McCoys.
All right. Let's see. Aaron, Geek in the City, weighs in on Sarah's Gmail. Going down on it for 12 hours. Says, try not to have any Gmail on the way to the parking lot. That's a little backhanded clerk's reference. And then he says, that wasn't funny. I feel stupid. Signed, Aaron. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. From the Oregonian, with a heart full of hate and a head full of tasty custard, Oregonian TV critic Peter Carlin. Hello, sir.
Hey, hi. What's up? What's going on?
What are the haps? What are the things? What's happening? What's shaking? What's going down?
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
How's life, Peter Carlin?
It's good.
All right.
You know, it's fine. It's great. How's yours? Oh. You're angry.
I'm not angry. In no way am I angry. I'm not angry about it. Well, I mean,
so you're not paying attention.
I'm angry. Thank you. Get your laws off my body. I'm angry in a generalized sense. I don't think I'm angry specifically. I was angry for about 10 seconds to this idiot that was starving his kid. But you know what? He'll get his. They're going to put him in jail, and he's going to be beaten senseless with something, and then somebody will do the right thing, and there'll be an accident out by the weightlifting, you know. No, there's going to be an accident out by the weightlifting section of the gymnasium, and he'll be gone from the gene pool, and we'll be better off for it. So F him. F him. F him with a ball peen hammer. That's what I'm saying. All right. Hey, so before we talk about rock and roll, let's talk about television.
Okay.
I'm just going to say, I'm never going to watch this show, Wedding Bells.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that it exists, because I got to read this from you. This, I'm quoting now, Peter Carlin's column from last week. Wedding Bells is a terrible show. Horribly conceived, terribly written, indifferently acted, bruised on the outside, rotten to the core. If you go anywhere near it, make sure to put on one of those yellow hazmat suits, the kind with gloves and the mask and the breathing apparatus, because you don't want to risk getting any of it on you. That's how awful it is. Yes, yes, I mean truly. And then you say that it's strangely compelling. But now, I don't even know, what is this, a sitcom? Is it a drama? What is it?
Doesn't matter. It's somewhere in between. It's a comic.
Is it a dramedy?
All
right.
But it's a but it's 100% sucky. So
what channel is it on?
The ABC.
All right, and it's from David. Kelly.
Oh no, wait! I lie. It's on the Fox.
Okay, it's and it's apparently from David E. Kelly, who is creative. There's like some law. He has to create one out of every three. He and J.J. Abrams have to create everything in television. Here's the thing about David E. Kelly. David E. Kelly probably will always be known as the guy who created Ally McBeal, but then he did Boston Legal and
Boston Public.
Boston Public, and the thing about David E. Kelly is, he has this particular tone to his writing, which is very difficult to sustain, and that tone is whimsy. Whimsy is really hard to sustain for more than a couple of seasons, and that's why, look, for God love it, for example, I say this now with the greatest of respect, but in many ways, it's probably just as well that Arrested Development got canceled when it did, because whimsicality is really hard to sustain for more than a couple of seasons, which is why Ally McBeal, and I unashamedly loved Ally McBeal for the first 2 years it was on. It was really good, and then man just lost style. It just sank like a TWA fuselage over the Atlantic. I mean, it just imploded.
Yeah.
And so, like, this Wedding Bell show is just doing it. He's cutting out the middleman, and the show is just to suck from the very beginning.
Sweet. Well, there's an even worse show coming up this week called October Road.
I hate it just based on the title.
Yeah, it's a coming-of-age story.
Of course it is. You can tell that it's October Road. You can tell that it's a television show that if they only had the money and the legal clout would feature an opening song from Bruce Springsteen.
Well, no, the thing is that it involves all these people who are in their late 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And so that means that they were born at this point in around 19... What are we saying? What year is this? 1980... Wait, no, I tell a lie. The late 70s, 79, right. 78, something like that. Uh-huh. But the only music they listen to is music that was recorded in the mid-70s.
Of course.
So they like Thin Lizzy. They're into Thin Lizzy. They're into, you know... And I'm just thinking, like... You know, that was some middle-aged TV executive's idea.
That's some marketing.
They're not cheap songs to clear.
Some marketing guy who thinks that's what the kids are still listening to. I read this hilarious article the other day about these FBI guys. It's kind of an interesting thing, actually. It does beg for a documentary.
Yeah.
About these FBI guys who go into chat rooms and pretend to be 14-year-old girls.
Oh yeah.
And they go onto MySpace or whatever, and they pretend to be some prepubescent girl, and they try to get pervs to hook up meetings with them at hotel rooms or whatever, and they've actually had to hire.
I talk to those guys all the time. I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's,
What?
Well, you talked to which?
I'm just joking around. Keep going.
Really, and just as a side note to that,
yeah.
It really is tempting. Now, I should say right now that I've never done this, but it really is tempting sometimes. Like, when you read these stories about these FBI guys that are, you know, they go on. These guys will log into these chat rooms as, like, pretending to be these sexed up 13-year-old girls, and immediately these perverted cretins come out of the woodwork. Are you ever kind of tempted to log into a chat room as like an underage, as like an underage girl, just to see if one of these perverts immediately like comes on to you?
No, because it would freak me out and make me so extremely unhappy. I find that whole little strata of the universe to be so insanely dark and
evil. Oh no, I mean it's repellent.
I don't even want to like acknowledge its existence. I feel like my life would be better spent just without even making the dumb joke I made about 48 seconds ago.
It's repellent on every level, but it is sort of strangely compelling. Anyway, I read this New York Times article about these guys with like at Quantico or whatever, where like that's their job. They like sit in a basement somewhere and they log on and they pretend to be teenagers, and then like these perverts try to get into their pants or whatever. But it was pretty funny that they were talking about they had to actually bring in some real 14-year-old girls to teach them what 14-year-old girls are actually into.
Yeah.
Because these guys would create these MySpace profiles,
mm-hmm.
and it would be a lot of like, you know, my name is Misty and I'm 13 years old, and my favorite bands are Led Zeppelin and Bryan Adams and Badfinger, you know, just like whatever.
Right, yeah.
Just like
Bobby Sherman.
I'm into Bobby Darin.
How about that Bobby Goldsboro?
So anyway, so let me ask you about this. Well, first of all, October Road is a terrible television show.
Horrible show. And the main guy is like supposed to be this like phenomenally successful young hip novelist. You know, and so every time, but it's like, you know, and obviously it's based on the life of the producer who wrote some hit movie or some such thing, you know.
Right.
But anyway, but like every time he opens his mouth and they want him to talk like a literary guy, you just want to punch his little teeth in.
Fantastic.
You know, because it's all about nihilism and, you know, it's terrible.
Well, let's talk about then The Riches.
Oh, fantastic show.
Now, The Riches, which I did not even know was going to air. We had a guy call me about it last week, but I didn't even know it was going to air until I was thumbing through Rolling Stone.
Mm.
And there was a really great full-page ad where it just showed a house, like a suburban house, with a full-size ski mask over it. And the house was looking out like it was a face. And this stars, the reason I care about this is because it has got the man who I believe is currently holding the title for funniest man on earth, which is Eddie Izzard.
Is it Izzard or is it Izzard?
Yeah, I have always heard it pronounced Eddie Izzard. Now maybe I'm wrong about that, but that is, so this is on FX, which really is kind of the mark of quality, dirt notwithstanding. FX is sort of like a junior HBO. They got some good original programming coming up. So what The Riches is, it's him and a mini driver.
Yeah.
So what's the deal?
Well, let's see. They belong, it's actually really, really fascinating because they're part of this group of, I didn't even know they existed, but like these Irish immigrant, like gypsy types called travelers who are just like traveling. It's like a very tightly knit group of con artists, essentially. And they drive around in RVs, like, you know, I'm sure gypsies of the old days, you know, went around in carriages or horse-drawn whatever. And, set up little camps and go off and just scam people and come back with their money and pool it. They sort of take care of one another. But the family, the couple played by Eddie Izzard and Minnie Driver, end up, for whatever reasons, they get into a conflict with the other travelers and they take off and they end up getting sort of involved in a car accident in which they're perfectly fine, but this other couple are killed on the spot, and it's way off in the middle of nowhere. And they figure out, you know, they go through their stuff, and they figure out very quickly that these people were moving to a brand new town that they'd never been to before, having bought the home on the internet, and they were these very, you know, nouveau riche professional types. And so they just assume their personalities and assume their lives.
Now, is this a comedy or is it a drama?
It's a little of both, but it's a dark, you know, it's one of those dark sort of tense comedies. And parts of it are very, very funny. And most of all, it's just a really sort of compelling commentary on, you know, on just American culture, because who isn't in some way, shape, or form faking it?
Well, I really, really hope, I mean, sight unseen, I hope that this show's a success, because I'm tired of Eddie Izzard being huge everywhere else in the world except here.
Yeah.
And, you know, if this is what it takes for him to become famous in America, then that's a bullet I'll bite. So I'm going to TiVo.com right now, and I am programming online at this very instant.
It's fabulous. It is really fabulous. And the pilot is super good. It's on tonight. I think it's a full hour. I think it's commercial free.
I'm all over that.
But anyway, so it's really, so I can't say enough. I was surprised how much I liked it.
All right, so I'm going to record that right now. Well, so moving from the important to the irrelevant, let's talk a little bit about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah?
The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and every year I swear that I'm going to quit caring about it. And every year I say that I'm going to get over it, and I'm not going to care about the next year's nominations or inductions.
Mm-hmm.
But the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame just fills me with furious rage. It really does.
What's got you so bent out of shape this time?
Because everything about it. Because, first of all, the whole notion of a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame sort of offends me. I mean, not to sound all puritanical about it. That's the wrong word. I've been doing that today where I can't find the right word. It's like a low-key sort of aphasia.
You better go see your neurologist, man. You could be having an issue.
It's a tumor. But I have this sort of low-grade Johnny Rotten thing about it, where I feel like the notion of a Hall of Fame and the notion of rock and roll are sort of contrary to one another.
Mm.
They're sort of mutually exclusive. It's like if you want to have your, if you want to be in a museum, learn to paint. I feel that, I've never been there. But I know
you're just mad because they won't put in all your favorite hair bands.
That's the other thing, is that it's a fundamentally elitist, it's an elitist organization, and rock and roll, and not to sound all evangelical and true believer about it, because I know that I can kind of go on and on and on about that. But rock and roll is, as cheesy and as corny as it sounds, rock and roll is very much the music of the people. It is very much, like hip-hop is now, like country music is. Rock and roll is very much sort of a music of, it is a music of the average person, the person in the street, as Paul Stanley would say. And yet, this year they're putting in Patti Smith, whose records are owned by no one. There's no one anywhere.
Yeah, but really interesting. But the thing is, I think in some ways, a lot of what they try to achieve when they make their nominations or they put people in the hall are to take people whose work is really, really good and influential, and yet, probably it's like those bands like the Velvet Underground, where they sold like 700 records, but all to other people that formed bands, and those people built on those, what these guys achieved and popularized their sound or popularize their ideas.
I suppose. I guess I can acknowledge that bands like the Ramones are a perfect example. The Ramones never sold any records when they were alive, but they were hugely influential. They are a before and after. They are a dividing line in rock and roll. But would you agree that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, though, seems to almost deliberately pass over groups that have massive appeal simply and solely for the reason that they have massive appeal?
No, I just think a lot of stuff that has massive appeal is kind of crappy, like all the stuff you like.
If the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is about honoring bands that have a long...
Give me, one example.
Well, the biggest and most defining example, the most definitive example, which I bring up every single goddamn year...
Yes.
If you're going to talk about bands in terms of influence, the most definitive example of that is Kiss.
Well, but they're a horrible, horrible band.
You know what? It doesn't... But I would say the same about Patti Smith, but your observation was that the Velvet Underground, for example, sold no records but were hugely influential. Kiss is the most influential band in the world. It's not the Beatles. They are the second most influential band of all time.
I think it's nonsense. And to the extent that they are an influence, I think they're a bad influence, because it's like the substitution of this kind of show busy. It's like this kind of rock and roll for small children. I mean, kids that like comic books. I mean, as far as I can see.
Well, first of all, I would say that it's not just kids that like comic books. And second of all,
adults who even more disturbingly like comic books.
I would say that whether it's bad or not is a completely subjective thing, but you can't deny the fact that there's all kinds of bands that are influential that are crap, but I would say that you can't deny that the shadow they cast over American rock and roll specifically is huge, massive. I don't care for the way Eddie Van Halen plays guitar particularly, because I think he overplays and blah, 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 but you can't knock the fact that that guy changed. He's a quantum shift in the rock and roll paradigm.
But I think that if you're somebody like, if the face of, a guy like Gene Simmons, who makes no, in some ways the most endearing thing about him is the fact that he makes no bones of the fact that it's just all business to him. I mean, he's a commodifier. And his whole thing has nothing to do with the art of it or the joy of of, I mean, he's just marketing something. He's got a brand.
I would say that Gene Simmons is, at least on the outside, what most rock acts are on the inside. And I would say that if you really are not about dollars, then you will sit in your basement and you'll play songs for yourself and you'll never sell them and no one will ever hear them.
That's nonsense, because, I mean, the thing is, part of the impulse, I think, to create something is that you want people to hear it or to see it or whatever, and then to respond to it. I mean, you want to have an effect on people. I mean, but people's motivations are like this complex tangle. It's like the whole beef you have about Kurt Cobain, which I think is total nonsense. I mean, on the one hand, yeah, the guy's an artist. He wants his work. You know, A, he wants to make a, you know, of course he wants to make a living, but, you know, he's expressing something. He wants, you know, he wants to have an impact on people. He wants them, you know, to feel something. I mean, and that's, you know, there's a certain element of cynicism that goes into that. You know, when you're, I mean, I don't know, cynicism may be the wrong, you know, you have to market that to some degree. But, you know, but again, I think a lot of those guys don't even imagine what the price of fame is going to be, because I think fame and creativity are two very different pursuits.
I think
Gene Simmons is all about being famous and making a crap load of money.
Well, first of all,
whereas Cobain or somebody like that is about expressing something and creating something, and then, you know, and then hopefully making enough money.
This is a whole other show that you and I could do, and Sarah's giving me that we got to break this thing here. But I would say this.
She can't handle the truth.
I would say that, first of all, you got to view Kiss and Kiss's music, which is memorable to people who are Kiss fans, even if it's not memorable to others. I would say that Kiss and their music and their records and their impact and their showmanship are separate from the persona of Gene Simmons. You got to separate the stuff from the stuff.
Like the main, dude in that band, and always has been, and it's all his creation, regardless if the other guys are, you know, had an impact.
Even if I grant that point, I would say this, though, Peter Carlin, TV critic for the Oregonian, I would say that while it's all well and good that you've got, you know, and I don't mean that sarcastically, I mean it sincerely, it is all well and good to be an artist, to be like an REM type band where you've got things you want to say, or you've got internal conflicts that you want to resolve through music, or you want to express yourself, or you're an Elliott Smith type guy that just wants to share your pain with the world or whatever. That's fine. But I would also argue that especially in rock and roll, of all music forms, in rock and roll, forming a band because you just want to be loud and sleazy and get chicks and make money is a perfectly acceptable thing. There's nothing wrong with that. I would say that that's been part of rock and roll since the very beginning. The fact that you form a band because you're a hooligan that wants to get paid and get laid, as they say. That's an inextricable part of rock and roll.
Yeah, I know, but some people do it, I think, in more sort of, you know, some people do that in an extremely cynical, I could care less what, what this is about, type of ways, and other people do it in ways that are really interesting. And, you know, I mean, listen to the there's this great Stones show up on wolfgangsvault.com from 1978, the Some Girls Tour.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you got to check it out. It's the most brutal. If you or your listeners haven't gone to this website, you got to go now at wolfgangsvault.com.
Yeah.
And it's there's a page on it called the Concert Vault, and there are literally hundreds and hundreds of pristine concert soundboard tapes at a whole array of really, really cool shows from the 60s through the 80s, or early 90s even. And there's a Stones show from Detroit, and they are just sleazy and grungy and at the top of their sort of punkier game. And that's like, you know, they hardly play any of the big, big hits because they're playing all their new stuff. And it's amazing how good it is. And that to me is like, you know, they don't care what anyone thinks at that point.
Right.
You know, they're not like a big, that sort of Broadway version of themselves that they became, you know, they sort of soon became. They're still really at the sort of the raw essence.
They weren't at the sponsored by Jovan Musk era.
Yeah, no, there's just totally, nobody would sponsor them, I don't think, under these circumstances, because they're just so incredibly, you know, I mean, it's amazing how sleazy and loose it is and how great it sounds.
All right. Well, as they say,
and that to me, my friends, is rock and roll. And they're not recreating it in exactly the same way the next night. It's a very specific, in-the-moment performance. Whereas Kiss from night to night, you know, you could see the first 10 minutes in Phoenix and then go to see the next 10 minutes in Albuquerque. And it's going to be exactly the same show.
Well, that's a fair point, and I would never disagree with you on that. That it is very much a show. Yeah.
Right. And to me, that's sort of like, show me some, give me something that's more, you know, real.
All right. As they say in the world of talk radio, we'll have to agree to disagree. All right. What's coming up in the Oregonian, Peter Carlin?
Oh, I've got something for Wednesday. I haven't written yet. A couple new comedies, a new Andy Richter comedy, which is really funny, and a new thing on Comedy Central called Halfway Home, which is interesting. And then probably a little thing of this Jeff Goldblum detective show called Reigns, which is coming on NBC, which I have low hopes for. And then Thursday, I totally rip up that October Road show.
Fantastic. I can't wait. All right, my brother.
Okay.
I'll talk to you soon. Peter Carlin, in print in the Oregonian or online at OregonLive.com, and feisty in all places. All right, there you go. Don't go anywhere. Back after this with Tim Riley. We'll try to crank out the top five here. Like is at 3, Dynamike at 7. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson. You know, he's so great, you just prod him until he explodes. That's the great thing about that guy. Back after this, it's AM 970, Solid State Radio. Yes, we want to give shouts out and mad props to our old friend Kim Morgan. Used to be the film reviewer on this show back in the day. She was apparently I didn't see it. I got a bunch of emails about it. She was the guest host on Ebert and Roper for the weekend, Kim Morgan. Who's, I guess, blonde now.
Yeah, I saw her. She was doing commentary on
Walk the Line.
She was on the Walk the Line thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't look bad. She just looked different because the last time I saw her, she had the black hair going on. Rick, are you going to talk about contacting your exes on MySpace? I'm in the same predicament. I'm in the same predicament. I got the same predicamentality going on. I need some gadalizing. We kind of mentioned it earlier. I don't know that we have time now. No time. No time. Big grains of salt. Ladies and gentlemen at the Ministry of Truth, it's Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
A four-year-old playing with a lighter started a fire in his townhouse in Salem over the weekend.
Well done.
Damage estimated $15,000, and now he set the mattress on fire. And he's been...
The bed is on fire.
Well, he's going to be punished. He's going to be sent to the Juvenile Fire Center program.
Where he's going to be whipped repeatedly with the something of a thing.
We have no idea what that entails.
I don't know what that means. How old is he?
Four.
He's four. He's not going to remember anything you teach him.
No.
Be better off with the whipping.
Mm-hmm. New research led by scientists at the Oregon National Primate Research Center demonstrates how obesity causes the breakdown of the brain system.
And also of your bed.
It provides a clear picture of some factors involved in obesity. More than 60% of American adults are overweight, more than 30% are obese. The results also have identifiable possible targets as new drug therapies aimed at assisting individuals in weight loss. This research may be read in the March issue of Cell Metabolism. Why not pick up a copy?
That sounds like a thrilling read.
Fantastic. Cell Metabolism.
Yeah.
So what happens? Well, leptin is a hormone secreted by fat cells. It suppresses food intake by affecting brain cells that control appetite. However, high levels of leptin can be found in severely overweight individuals and can lead to leptin resistance. I guess you're better off picking up the magazine.
I was going to say, maybe this makes sense in context.
Because leptin resistance means that the body no longer responds to the hormone's weight-suppressing effects, as we thought all along.
Hey, look over there for a second. All right. Hello, Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick.
What's up?
I'll tell you three names that ought to be on that Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that are way overdue.
Here we go.
Duane Eddy, Link Wray, and Dick Dale.
I thought Dick Dale was in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Hell no. They won't even give that man the time of day. I actually started a letter writing column.
Yeah, that'll do the job.
Years ago.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah, right. I got 67 people to write in and actually wrote in. And hell no, though. Never got an email, never got a call, never got a free coffee cup, not a damn thing.
It's not a fair world, sir.
Hey, I'll tell you something. Peter Carlin's full of crap. I don't know what he's preaching there. But if it doesn't make you want to get up, dance, or punch the guy next to you, or sleep with his girlfriend, it ain't rock and roll.
All right, there. Thank you, sir.
Bye.
All right, there you go. No, Peter and I have many differences, but that's why we bring him on, for diversity of opinion. Here's Tim Riley.
Speaking of that, let's look forward to Ann Coulter's newest book, It comes out in October.
I am a bony whore.
It's called If Democrats Had Any Brain, They'd Be Republicans.
She's running out of titles. That's not even interesting. That's like when Michael Moore, who always, and I always have to double check myself to make sure I'm not saying Roger Moore. Michael Moore, who had great titles going for a while, and then he lost, like he had a Stupid White Man, which is a great title. And then, you know, and then he had Fahrenheit 9/11 is great. And then he had Dude, Where's My Country, which is a terrible title for a book. And his new movie, which is called Sicko, is not good. That guy used to be really good at coming up with compelling names for things. And now it's all fallen off, just like Ann Coulter.
Well, the Crown publisher and senior vice president, Steve Ross, says, every book we have published with Ann has been a major bestseller, and we expect the same thing with the upcoming title. Her other books include Treason, Slander, and Godless.
All right. Well, there you go. That's
well, it has been rumored for months now, and it looks like Ford is about to sell its luxury sports car division, Aston Martin. That's James Bond's car. Bloomberg News is reporting Ford will sell the division to a group of investors led by UK racing champion David Richards in a deal that will carry a price tag of roughly $850 million. Aston Martin is part of Ford's premier automotive group of European luxury brands. A formal announcement on the deal could come at some point today.
Do we have time to do the top five?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, never mind.
I'm on your day.
I always, sometimes, somebody just has to come in with a gun and force me to do the top five, because I always put it off and then we never get to it.
That'd be a good new bit.
Yeah. Let's make sure we do that on Thursdays. If somebody comes in with a new bit called Somebody Comes In With a Gun and pistol whips Rick until he gets to crap. All right. Well, let's just do a few more news stories here then. Tim has just put the news away. Tim, did you just throw the news away?
Well, I threw away the news I had read.
All right, well, we've got this pile here. I seized the Darwin watch anyway, so we should probably get to that.
Let's do the Darwin watch.
I'm sorry, I thought we were going to transition to the top five.
Oh, okay.
My fault. Well, let's do this, and we'll do one more after that, and we'll break.
Okay. I have a feeling some bad stuff is about to go down.
Don't!
A man and a woman died over the weekend after driving around in traffic, stopped at a railroad crossing, and into the path of not one but two moving trains.
Bam! And bam!
The driver of the Chevrolet Cavalier ignored crossing arms and flashing lights at the railroad crossing.
Those don't mean anything, honey.
The girl was struck by a northbound Amtrak train. This particular person tried to go against the odds and beat the train across the track, said the Jacksonville Fire Department spokesman.
Why would you ever try to beat a... Look, we've all ducked around there if the train is, like, miles away or if you can't see the train. If you're having to use the phrase, let's beat the train, you're never going to beat... The train always wins there. That's an equation that you are always on the wrong side of.
The Amtrak Silver Star had just passed Jacksonville, but it slammed into the car and ended up wedged underneath the train and pulled for several hundred feet. Police identified the victims as Timothy Love and Angelina Felix. They're both 19. Because the vehicle was demolished in several places, there's not enough evidence to identify which of the victims might have been driving that car.
Draw your own conclusions from there. Buried in a pencil box.
Oh, man.
They were hit by two trains at once, really?
Yeah.
So what was one train going one direction and the other train was going the opposite direction?
That's correct. Yes,
it's like a story problem.
Mm-hmm.
What was her name?
Wile E. Coyote.
Totally. James Love and Angelina Felix cross a train track at 5 miles an hour. They are then killed and reduced to 3 square centimeters of rubble.
You can just hear the Hanna-Barbera sound effects for that.
So, I wish I'd been prepared, actually. All right, there's your Darwin watch.
That
for
thank you. Don't. Another one bites the dust.
Hail. Fantastic. All right, let's do one more. There's a huge news pile.
There is.
Over there that we don't ever get to. So we can do a couple from there, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll come back and wrap it up.
Well, Fern Bernstein wants a cattle prod used on her son. He's autistic. He's 48 years old. Some of those operate in the Chicago group home where Bradley Bernstein lives, but they disagree on which is the best method to respond when the stuckily built Bradley begins a violent outburst.
They disagree on what is the proper duct tape for holding him in place while they tase him repeatedly.
Well, his mother has long relied on a small jolt from a cattle prod to calm him down, but Disability Advocates Group, those do-getters, as well as the company running the group home, Trinity Services, are shutting the shock treatments. But the elderly couple who sued Trinity over the issue say they're going to continue to fight for what's right, for his own good. Most of the time, he just starts acting up and beating his head. We just showed him what's sufficient. We had a judge sign an order saying it was okay to use a cattle prod and to let him lead a decent life.
The whole point
of doing this is to protect him.
I don't think you can use a cattle prod. Well, is it Florida?
This is Chicago, Illinois.
I'm not sure you can just use a cattle prod on people. Maybe you can. Well, all right, there.
No, within moderation.
Yes. spare the cattle prod. Spoil the child.
Yeah.
The comedy there was spare the prod, spoil the child. Oh, I wish I had that to do over again. All right. I could just dump that whole joke and do it again a second time. Well, whatever. Just in your head, mentally, just pretend that I say spare the prod, spoil the child. Because that would have been funnier. It's okay. I'll be funnier tomorrow. All right, well, let's take a break here. We'll come back after this and wrap it up. It is 503-733-2970. Spare the prod. Spoil the child. Yeah, there's no going home.
You can't take it back.
Can't unring that bell. All right, back after this. Like is at 3. Donna, Mike, 7. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Don't go anywhere. Saddest part of the broadcasting day, the final segment of the Rick Emerson Show. Rick, I'm a little surprised you like Boston because they got almost none of that high school dropout teen rebellion angst that turns you on, blah, blah, blah. Hey, it's not that I'm a huge Boston fan. I just admire well-done pop songs, and the record's a little too slick for my taste, a little too much sheen on those, but they're good. That guy's a great singer, too, and I admire the fact that a record literally recorded in a guy's basement. Here's a great story about Boston. You may not know this. This is a true story about Boston. Here's the reason to like Boston, if nothing, even if you never need to hear More Than a Feeling again. Tom Scholz recorded that entire album in his basement. And this is not in his basement now with, like, Pro Tools and, like, computer technology. This is like a 1978 basement where it's just tape and there's nothing to make you sound better than you really are. He records a whole album in his basement. He pitches it to the record labels. Epic, I think it was, or CBS, maybe. They finally, he pitches them the demo tapes. They finally say, okay, well, these demo tapes are good, but this crap recorded in your basement isn't going to sell. Here's a whole bunch of money. We are going to make you go record all this in a regular studio. He takes the money, sticks it in his pocket, goes home, sits on his ass for 6 months, comes back and gives them the demo tapes again. They listen and they go, this is genius. This is much better. Fantastic. And then they put it out and it sells 17 million copies. And then he...
Aren't that is pretty likable.
Yeah. And then he used that money to, like, build a better basement and told the record company to get effed for the rest of his career. So that's... You can like Boston for that and nothing else. Rick, as for Richard Jenny, he was a pretty funny guy. He even had himself a sitcom called Platypus Man. It was par for the course. He was a wise guy, sardonic, intelligent comedian that I thought you would like. I don't know anything about him as a comedian, but I know that shooting yourself in the house and leaving yourself there for your girlfriend to find is a punk-ass way to go out.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care. I don't know anything about Richard Jenny, but I know that killing yourself in the house where you know that somebody you presumably love is going to find you is like the least manly thing you can possibly do. And anything else you do in your career is just a prelude to going out like a pussy, which is what that is. So, that's...
Yeah, I'm usually sympathetic about these things. I completely concur with you.
Yeah. It's just a punk way to go out, and he's, you know, so F that guy for that, if for nothing else. What else do we have here? Rick, my guess, there are lists you can give off the top of your head. For instance, can't you list all the Kiss albums in order, or the albums of another band? Yes, that is true. I will not bore everybody by proving it, but I can do that. We never did get to this. I would just say that James Brown is not really technically... Wait, hold my...
James Brown is dead.
Really buried underground, but he is in a crypt. So he's not just like, I swear to God, that they put him in some kind of a crypt. He's not.
How many days? Has it been like 80 days or something?
80 days. He's not technically underground.
But I do. But he's not just laying around at room temperature anymore. So to be fair, we should say that he's not really at room temperature. Because we don't have mail, the services of mailman Chris at this point, I should say, here's some stuff I didn't get to. Let's see, what did I not get to? I did not get to crap I noticed at the supermarket. Oh, and I didn't get to this whole thing about... I didn't get to this whole thing about the iPod versus the whatever. I didn't get to that. And I didn't get to this thing about... which, and I never thought I would be saying this, but I never got to this thing about Calvin Klein either. So, do you know that CK1... is the best-selling cologne of the last 25 years.
Really?
I have never in my...
I remember like going to middle school and everyone smelling like that.
Yeah. So anyway, there's an article about that tomorrow that's kind of interesting. Do we have time for you to read this Britney Spears blurb?
Yeah, it's pretty short because there's nothing really known about it.
Because I don't want to make it a whole Britney watch.
Yeah. All right, I guess there's a tape. It says Britney Spears' problems have just got a little worse, according to Russian Malloy, whoever that is.
They're the people that do Page Six for
okay.
the Post.
Well, I guess there's a tape of Britney floating around showing the former pop star dressing up with two dancers, you know, that strip club she was hanging out at.
Right.
Two dancers from a New York City nightclub taken February 12th. The tape is on sale, and the owners have top bid at $120,000. But damaging is the video footage that may follow Britney's dancer buddies are telling friends the club fired them when management discovered the security video of them doing some serious partying with Britney Spears.
Well, see, but you would think, although it's not like sex, it's drugs, maybe?
I've read a couple articles on it. Some of them are alluding to drugs, some of them sex.
Where was this strip club?
In New York.
In New York. And so this is Britney. Is this the same strip club that those still photographs are from?
Yeah, I've heard she, like, trying on all the random bikinis.
Swapping bikinis with a stripper?
Mm-hmm.
Just go dip yourself in a vat of acid after that.
I guess they're in the office in the back room, and a source says that goes to the internet. It's going to be big trouble. It might be what they need to take Spears' kids away from her.
See, I don't think they need anything else to take Britney's kids away from her at this point. And you had speculated that maybe that's what she wants. That she wants she just doesn't want to have kids anymore. And if that's her goal, is to just not have kids anymore. I don't think she has to do a whole lot else because, I mean, just being in rehab. I mean, to the best of our knowledge, Kevin Federline's never been in rehab, so he's got one up under there. So it seems like that's all you really have to do is to go to rehab and they'll take your kids away. Second of all, if you're a stripper and you're on film getting it on with Britney Spears, it seems like that would only increase your standing as a stripper at the club. So it seems like it's probably drugs. Because if it was sex, the club ain't going to have some problem with that. We want to thank CNN radio correspondent Bob Costantini and the Oregonians Peter Carlin today. Coming up tomorrow, we'll start to talk to Steve Kastenbaum about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductions. Dennis Pitzenmager from The Fuel Show is going to join us tomorrow as well. Plus, I swear to God, we'll get to this top five. Come hell or high water and a whole bunch of other stuff as well. The Rick Emerson Show produced today and every day by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon for AM 970 Solid State Radio. In the newsroom, Tim Riley, Scotty J is our PA, and the gatekeeper is Dave Zinn. As always, thanks for listening. Be safe. Don't let the bastards grind it down. Thank you for listening. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.
James Brown is dead.